Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hi there, I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
We're real life best friends, but we met playing fake life best friends, Turk and JD, on the sitcom Scrubs.
20 years later, we've decided to rewatch the series one episode at a time and put our memories into a podcast you can listen to at home.
We're going
to
get all our special guest friends like Sarah Chalk, John C. McGinley, Neil Flynn, Judy Reyes.
Show creator Bill Lawrence, editors, writers, and even prop masters will tell us about what inspired the series and how we became a family.
You can listen to the podcast Fake Doctors, Real Friends with Zach and Donald on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
YouTube Music is the new app that combines everything you would expect from a streaming service with the magic of YouTube to bring everything to life. With YouTube Music Premium, you'll get ad-free music that plays with the screen off or while using other apps. Get music wherever you want it, even if you're offline. So download the new YouTube Music app today and start a free 30-day trial. Then you just pay $9.99 a month. Terms and restrictions, of course, apply. But this is the real deal, people. Download it and enjoy music the best way possible with YouTube Music Premium. Okay? Now, here's the show. What's up, everybody? How are you doing this evening or afternoon or whatever time it is you're listening to this beautiful podcast? I call it beautiful because I enjoy it so much. And thank you for listening to this discussion on independent music on the podcast 100 Words or Less. Boom! Yeah, that's what we got. I'm Ray Harkins, hanging out with you, hanging out with other people who are involved in this independent music community, finding out about why they care about it so much, why they still stick around, why they play in bands, why they put out records, why they take photographs, why they just care about this thing so much, like me. As I get older, I just, it attaches me to this thing even more because of seeing how everything else exists in the world. It's like, not only is it this beautiful subculture, but it's such a amazing escape, an amazing community, so much stuff. But who's the guest this week? I know. I presume you probably have no idea because you cannot read. No, of course you can read. You know that the guest this week is Luis Aponte, the drummer of incredible hardcore band called Jesus Piece from Philadelphia. I was aware of this band and I enjoyed what they did. I was like, okay, that first release of theirs was cool. And then, you know, obviously they were doing their fair share of touring and playing with cool bands and, you know, getting their name out there. But it wasn't until this full length where I really, really reckoned with them and said, holy crap, this record is bludgeoning. It's brutal. It's everything that I like about a modern hardcore record. It's, yeah, it's just so good. I love it. And so I hit up their PR person, and we kind of we were able to make this happen. And Luis, actually, his girlfriend, his significant other, appeared on the show. I don't know. This was maybe like a year or so ago. Melissa from a band called Small Circle, which is put out a really, really good record last year. And so I had her on, and then yeah, it all, you know, it's full circle. We keep it in the family here, right? But it's the holiday season, right? We are approaching the fact and the time in which you need to think about gifts for people. And there's no better place to give gifts than rockabilia.com. And use the code PCJabberJaw, and that will give you 15% off your order. And for the music lover in your life, like, you could probably get, I would say, 95% of your gifts, you know, like maybe if your, you know, uncle isn't a music lover, or your mom or your dad or whatever, but everybody else, you'll be able to find their perfect gift on rockabilia.com, from shirts to long sleeves to hoodies to flags to posters, whatever it is that you think they might like, Rockabilia has. And I love their company so much. Fast shipping, amazing customer service, and they know what they are doing, okay? Trust me, when you order from them, you will be taken care of to the utmost degree, okay? So PC Jabberjaw gets you 15% off. Dive in there, order away, and you'll love it, okay? And then you'll be like, yo, I got all my gifts, you know? They get shipped directly to me, toss them in a gift bag, boom, done. Done for the year. Done on, you know, December 13th or something like that, which is something I need to do, right? Yeah, I think so. But yeah, rockabilia.com, thank you very much for your eternal support of this show. I had an interesting experience this weekend. I went to Arizona with a friend of mine who, you know, what I would define as a quote unquote civilian. And I mean that, you know, in a non-derogatory sense. He, you know, he's a little bit younger than me, like maybe 30 years old. So 8 years younger than me, but, you know, really hasn't been exposed to, you know, subculture. So to speak, his political beliefs and kind of like who he is as a person is what I like to call subculture adjacent, where he has these beliefs that I'm like, oh man, like there's a lot of people, you know, in the punk and hardcore community that feel that same way. But we went out to Phoenix for a few different reasons. One of them was to visit my grandmother, who's 88, 89 years old. She's up there, but I love her dearly and just haven't got a chance to see her. So I was able to do that. And then we also went out to see a Five Finger Death Punch show. One of my friends, Doc Coyle, who is a previous guest on this very podcast, he plays in a band called Bad Wolves that was opening the show. And so my friend likes Five Finger Death Punch, and he was like, hey man, that'd be fun. And I'm like, yeah, I can get us into the show for $0. Would you be interested in that? So we rolled into the town on Friday night, and lo and behold, Drug Church and Gouge Away were playing at the local venue out there, Pub Rock Live, if I'm not mistaken. So I was like, hey, do you want to go to the show? It's like, you've never really probably been to a punk or hardcore show. And he's like, no, I'm all about it. So it was really, really cool because, you know, we take this for granted. We go to shows all the time, or even if we don't go all the time anymore, we've been to enough of these shows to kind of feel it, you know, and kind of understand what's happening. Like, you know, I walk into a room like that and I don't think twice about it. But watching it through someone else's eyes and kind of experience and seeing how they viewed it was awesome. It was so, so cool. And the show was great. We were able to hang out with my good friend Patrick after they played, and also said hi to Christina from Gouge Away. She was, you know, a guest on the show, I don't know, a couple months ago, but it was great. I just loved having that experience. And then the next night, I loved having the complete opposite experience, where it's like, you know, we were at their arena, which is like the, you know, AK Pavilion or something. I don't know how to pronounce it, but you know, it's like 14,000-15,000 people. You know, huge rock show, tons of production, just really interesting to see. And it was cool. I got to see Doc play with Bad Wolves, and you know, Bad Wolves are a pretty successful band at this point. They got a good head of steam going on, and watching them kind of set up, it was just like, oh man, they got their, you know, they have their huge banner, but you know, it's no frills. You know, they're just getting up there with their amps, their mics, and their you know, in-ear monitors, and they're doing the damn thing. And then, yeah, they played with Breaking Benjamin as well. You know, who I personally am not a fan of, nor am I a fan of Five Finger Death Punch, but watching these shows was, you know, was pretty breathtaking, because here's these huge stage shows and huge production, And it was really, it was engaging to watch. Like whether or not I, you know, you like the music, just watching a show of that level is really, really interesting. So, I'm not suggesting that you go run out and go see a Five Finger Death Punch show, but you know, if you have an opportunity like I did to where it's like, oh yeah, maybe I'll be able to check this out. It, you know, broadens your horizons a little bit. So anyways, a little sidetrack there, but I just thought that it was an interesting observation. So yeah, Luis, the drummer for Jesus Piece, it was a great conversation. He was actually up in the woods at a yogi retreat and had to, you know, there's a little bit of spotty reception here there, but, you know, not enough to where it would really, you know, derail the conversation. There was just a little few patches towards the beginning, but we ironed it out and it worked out perfectly. So here he is, and I will talk to you after the episode is over. Jesus Piece, I became aware of, you know, I mean, when you guys came onto the scene and, you know, released your, you know, your first 7-inch and everything. And it was, you guys were a band I always kind of paid attention to in the periphery. Like I listened to the stuff and I was like, that's right. Cool. That's cool. That's cool. But then once you guys dropped the LP, you know, I feel, and I'm sure you've encountered this many times yourself, where, you know, that's like a band's real first statement, you know, where it's like, okay. We've done a demo. We've done a 7-inch. Yeah,
it's funny that you say that because I think that's the case for a lot of people, and even myself actually. Like listening back on the 7-inch after like I would say a year or maybe less of putting out the 7-inch, I was like, that is not us. Like that was like me, John, and Dave. Like you know, we didn't have a job or anything. We were just like you know, just messing around, and then we just came up with that EP, and then Aaron always wanted to make like a heavy band. And so he was like, oh, we should do this. And I was like, okay, well, we're writing these songs. And then Ant literally came up to me at a show one time and was like, I'm playing bass or something, like something super weird. And like, and then now that we put out this LP, like we've been dying to put out new music because like for a long time, people have always felt that way. Like, oh, I've always wanted to check you out. I listened to the EP, wasn't really feeling it. But then I saw you guys live and I was like, oh, this is like way different. And like, I think that this LP is an actual like better depiction of who we are as a band because we have like this energy when we play live, in my opinion, that like blows our 7-inch out of the water. Like our 7-inch can't even, it just doesn't even make any sense that it would be even the same band. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the music's the same, but the energy is way different and the mood is different.
Yeah. Oh so no.
I think that this, excuse me, what?
No, I totally agree.
Yeah. So like, I think this LP is like a really good like bridge and like depiction of like what I personally would like to hear from us. And I don't know, I'm just like really proud of it. So I'm happy that this is like the first actual LP that we dropped. And this is actually my first personal LP that I've ever dropped. I was working on one. I used to be in a black metal band and we worked on it for a while, but it just, a lot of things happened and it never came out. So this is my first LP ever. And I'm really, really, really happy with it.
Yeah, no, that's really exciting. Cause yeah, it is, you know, when you first start messing around with, you know, bands and releasing stuff, like, you know, yeah, when you're releasing a demo or a 7-inch, like, you know, nothing feels quote unquote serious, you know, you're just doing it because it,
right.
But then like, once another person kind of invests in your band, you know, even if it's like, yo, we'll give you a couple $1,000 to record a record, you're like, whoa, like, okay.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Right. Yeah, like, I guess I need to take this more seriously. And then, you know, that kind of pushes you to that spot where you could, you know, have the time to actually represent yourself appropriately.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think, you know, and for the writing process for this, it was like, the fact that we were signed on the Southern Lord and the fact that we did have a deadline, I think that definitely gave us a lot of pressure, but it was a lot of good pressure. And the fact that like, we would have taken like forever to put another album because we were touring nonstop, like straight up. Like I would say like 1 year we did like 9 months out of the year or something. I don't know. But like we were touring nonstop. So we didn't really have time to write. So the fact that we had a deadline and like people eventually, you know, a lot of people were like, you know, writing articles like, well, who knows when they're going to release their LP, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? We should get on this. And And don't get me wrong, we were like trying to write stuff, but all of us are really, really big perfectionists and like super weird about how we want things to go. So we were writing songs and just straight scrapping them. Like that happened so many times.
Right.
So I don't know, like it took a while, but I thought it was well worth it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, you know, it's the first thing that you've done where you can look back on it. 'Cause you know, usually bands, you are most critical of your material even after, you know, whatever, a week after you've released something, you're like, all right, well, I'm on to the next thing. That thing sucks. But yeah, you have the ability to like look at what you've just released and be like, oh yeah, like I'm proud of that.
Right. And I just knew what we were capable of after releasing the 7-inch. Like, I didn't think anything of this, and I never thought it would ever take off, and you know, in any way, you know, and the fact that anybody even cares at all was just like a really, really big deal to me. And you know, and I knew that we were all like really great musicians, but honestly, like the amount of touring and like shows we played and the experience we had, that actually helped us like write this record a lot better. Because you listen to the 7-inch, my drums on that, as compared to the 12-inch, is like very, 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 very different. Like I'm so happy with my drumming now, and as opposed to like the 7-inch, I was just so uncomfortable and just not used to like being in a band like this or an environment where like, I don't know, I'm not really good in my recording environments, but like, I don't know, I just felt like a lot more confident in this record, which is really awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, plus, you know, when you go out there and you play so many shows, you start to become kind of this well-oiled machine where you're like, oh yeah, like I know, right. I'm comfortable behind my instrument more than I was, you know, whatever, 10 months ago.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so, you know, putting the focus more on you as a person. So were you born and raised in Philly?
No, I was born in Lehigh Valley, which is an hour north of Philly. I spent like almost my entire childhood there. I moved to Rhode Island for a little bit, and then I moved back, and then I started going to hardcore shows at like eighth grade or something. And then, sorry, someone's talking, and that kind of, that's a bunch of old people talking.
No problem.
And so, I was just always going to Philly hardcore shows like all the time. And then eventually I met a bunch of people. We started the band, and I eventually just moved down there. And I've only lived down there for like 4 years. So I've always been involved with Philly stuff, but you know, I come from Allentown. That's where I was born.
Got it. Yeah. Which is funny because most people that, you know, would look at Pennsylvania as a state, like it's such a weird state because you have, you know, Philly, obviously on the East Coast, and then you have, you know, Allentown and a lot of those, you know, whatever, Pittsburgh and like the working class cities,
right?
Like they're so different from one another, but most people are just like, oh yeah, Pennsylvania.
Well, it's funny because like we like talk about like Pennsylvania, but like literally all it is like Allentown, Philly, and like a bunch of racist people in the middle. I'm not going to say all everyone's racist, but there's a lot of weird stuff happening in the middle of PA, and then Pittsburgh. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
it's funny that like we like rep PA so hard, but it's actually like, it's funny because like PA is actually like a really, like, I think PA has the highest number in KKK members or something like that. That was last recorded. Don't quote me on that, but that's something that I've heard. And it's just funny that we just rep PA so hard. But like, I don't know. I like Philly a lot, and Allentown's amazing. Bethlehem's amazing. The whole Lehigh Valley is really slept on. Like, where I come from, we had this place called the Secret Art Space, and we had so many crazy shows there. Like, and it's so low key. Like, nobody really knew about it, but like, we had a whole, I don't know if you're familiar with like Lehigh Valley Pair of Creations, or like Vegan Treats, or Square of Opposition Records.
Yep.
That's all from Lehigh Valley. You know what I'm saying? And we had a lot of people like, you know, rapping really hard there and like doing like a insane amount of shows. I think they're still doing a bunch of shows. So, you know, if anybody listening to this who's listening to Lehigh Valley, you gotta check it out.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, yeah, there definitely are communities that kind of spring up around, you know, even if it's just like one or two bands, but when you put like-minded individuals into a, you know, community together, they start to, you know, make moves and start to create their own path and scene. And so, yeah, that's totally what happened with Lehigh Valley. And like, I mean, even people, you know, can point to, you know, Syracuse in the 90s. It's like, you know, there's no logic behind why the fact that, you know, Syracuse would be like a hotbed of hardcore if you had no context for it. But you're like, oh yeah, Earth Crisis came in there. So of course, like that's how it happened.
But even so, like, not even just talking about now, Lehigh Valley had like a whole thing going on in like the '80s. Even my dad told me that he saw Butthole Surfers, Murphy's Law, Youth of Today, all of them at this place called Oliver J's in Allentown. And like, that was like, I don't know, early '90s, late '80s or something like that. So like, that was like, that's been going on since that long, you know, like,
yeah.
And also like, there was like a big Doylestown scene, which is another suburb of Philly. And I definitely wouldn't call Allentown a suburb by any means. It's definitely a city. It's just like very like small and poor kind of, and it's like, you know, it's a little crime ridden, but it's like, you know, it's really cool. But yeah. Bethlehem and East End and stuff, it's like all really nice up there.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But yeah, yeah.
And so what was your family structure like? You know, mom and dad in the house, do you have brothers and sisters?
I have two adopted brothers that were my cousins, but, you know, I don't ever like to say that they're adopted, but, you know, I'm proud that they, you know, my family got them out of, they were living in like an Amish family, and we didn't want them around like, just a different culture than what they had been used to. I'm Puerto Rican, and, we just wanted them to be in an environment where they could feel comfortable around like family. So my mom took them in, even though like my mom, come from like a, you know, lower middle class family, very like pretty, not wouldn't say that we're like super poor. My mom always worked very, very hard for us to eat and took care of us, and I always had clothes, and you know, we moved a lot, but we always figured it out. And the fact that she took them in was like really, really awesome. And I have one baby brother who was just born, I think in 2006, I forget. I have one older brother. We have different dads. And, yeah, my mom and dad have always been together. They got married pretty late because of like a lot of financial stuff, and they just never got to it. And I don't know, they're still together. It's really awesome, actually. And like, they're really chill. My parents are like really nice when it comes to like my life, and they've always been super supportive, and in a way where they've always accepted me for who I was. They never really come to my shows or anything like that. They're working and stuff, but my dad's like a DJ, and he got me into hardcore. He got me into skateboarding, and
that's cool.
And he got me in hardcore. He showed me what straight edge was. He put X's on my hand, and I was like 12. He was like, don't ever be like me, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, I was like, cool, and I won't. And I never was.
I can safely say, like, so I've been doing this for, I don't know, close to 6 years or so, and I've talked to a lot of people, and including people who come from the scene that you and I do, or, you know, straight edge ourselves. But I have literally never heard of a father exing up their own son or daughter. That's
really,
dude, that's wild. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad, he put it on. I think he might've been drunk when he said this. I'm like, no shade of my dad. Like, I love him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, he put X's on the palms of my hands right before I was going to go to Boys and Girls Club. Cause it was like, he really thought that if I left the house, I was going to like get into like, cause like I said, Allentown's not that good, but, you know, a city.
Yeah.
So he thought I was going to get involved with the wrong people, fall into like that path. But like, I've seen my dad act up enough to know the way it was, and I just had no desire at all. Well, you know, and at that time I was only like 12, but like as I grew older. But anyway, I get off topic a lot.
No,
he put X's on the palms of my hands, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
And he was like, it's straight edge. Like, you got to live by this forever. And I was like, all right. And like, I mean, as I get older, like in high school, I used to get made fun of for being straight edge. I used to X up going to school, which was like pretty funny. And a lot of kids would be like, you know, you're straight edge, like pussy, like stuff like that. So like saying like crazy stuff. Like,
yeah.
But, I don't know. And I just always have been in my, I never had really any straight edge friends. And so like recently, like all my friends used to always drink and stuff and get party, but like, them doing it was enough for me to like get the entertainment of like, you know what I mean? Like, I just never was about it.
Yeah.
So, recently I did, you know, a lot more friends. It's become like a more accepting and like prominent thing where people are, you know, repping straight edge really hard, and it's really awesome. And I feel more proud to be straight edge than ever.
Yeah, no, that's very, very cool. Yeah. what you said about X-ing up to school, I definitely did that myself as well. And like, but I always attribute that to like what I like to call kid logic, where it's like in your head, you're like,
right.
Yeah, like this, and you'll
make sense.
Right. And you'll get a kick out of this. Like, I, you know, of course, when you're going to a show, you X up with both hands, but at school, I only X'd up one hand because that was like a casual, that was like casual straight edge. You know, it's like, okay, I don't want to get in anybody's face about this, but it's like, dude, you showed up to school with X's on your hand. Like, calm down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, low-key, like, there was, like, some punk kids in my school, because I grew up and I was really into, like, punk. Like, I was, like, super into, like, the Casualties, the Exploited, like, Circle Jerk, stuff like that. But I've always, like, said I was straight edge. And, like, and then I remember, like, I saw some, like, punk kids in my school, and I was like, oh, maybe they know what hardcore is. Like, so I, like, put an X on my hand, and just to see, like, I threw a flag out there to see if anybody, like, knew, like, if they what it was. And, like, I just remember, like, the one kid knew what it was. He's my friend Tyler. We're good friends now, but he saw the X Men and he just like made fun of me for it, and I was just like so embarrassed. And it was just like so funny, like looking back on it now, because he's like he's like a really cool dude, but it was just funny at the time because we were both immature in our own sense, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh no, absolutely. Totally, absolutely. Well, I mean, it makes it makes sense that you kind of got into, you know, the punk in that area too, just because it was like, you know, that, I mean, Casualties were obviously from that area, and like that was such a, you know, a huge sort of like street punk scene in the Northeast. So it makes sense that that was an entry point. And so, so as you were, you know, kind of growing up, and like, so describe to me, like, so you said your parents got married later. Like, did they get married like after you were born, or they were married before?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like way later. I was like, I think I was like 18 when they got married or something like that. I didn't even go to the wedding. Like my parents and I had like a little bit of a falling out when I was like young, and you know, I started working right when I was 16 and worked really hard. And I moved out into like this like kind of punk house in like Allentown somewhere, cause we were going through some stuff, and you know, they got married and I had a lot of like weird resentment towards them. So I just didn't talk to them, but you know, I don't regret it. Like we're fine now. And like, you know, I really just sucked up my pride and just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just got over it. You know, like you can't like go on your life like hating, you know, your parents. You got to respect your mom. You got to respect, you know, the life they gave you in general. So, you know, I think we talked about it a little bit and everything's cool now. But yeah, they got married like,
got it. Way later.
After I was born.
Got it.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't even have like a wedding. They had like a courthouse thing. Like I said, like we couldn't really, I don't even think they could afford like a wedding or something like that.
Sure. Well, and plus, I mean, they had created a family already and a family structure. So it's like,
right.
I'm sure the wedding was just like, yeah, we could just do something simple in the backyard.
Exactly. It was just like something small. And like, I don't really think anyone went. They just wanted to do it just to do it, because they were like, well, I don't know why we're still aren't married. They actually like didn't even get rings. Like they just like tattooed each other's name on like their ring finger.
Yeah, absolutely.
As funny as that is, like, because yeah. my mom texted me and was like, who's that person that like tattoos you sometimes? I was like, oh, it's like Devin from Keystone. And she's like, okay, we're gonna go there and we're gonna get our names tattooed on each other's hands for like the ring. And I was like, okay, like that's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's what they wanted to do. So whatever makes them happy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as you started to, you know, grow up and like you said, your parents were supportive and they understood, like, you know, I mean, clearly your dad was understanding of the, you know, punk and hardcore stuff. You know, what kind of kid did you find yourself being as you started to, you know, go to, you know, junior high and start to interact with the world? Like you said, you know, some people were making fun of you because, you know, you were straight edge and that sort of stuff. You know, but were you an outgoing kid? Were you quiet?
Oh, well, no, I was like, it depends. Like even like today, like if I meet like strangers or something, like I'm usually pretty quiet and like reserved, but otherwise, like if I'm like homies with you, like I'm mad outgoing. Like I'm like always the person in the room who's like always yelling, trying to get the energy up. Like, let's go, let's get pumped. And obviously I go through, like, I have like a pretty, like, I think I have like bipolar disorder. My dad does, but like, I always just like flip switches like with my emotions a lot. And like, that can be kind of annoying for like everyone else, but you know, and I get self-conscious about like making everyone else feel bad. But like coming up in junior high and like I don't know, high school, like my parents and family always view me as the different kid. They were like, oh yeah, he's different, he's unique, that's more. A lot in Puerto Rican culture, or like, you know, black culture, anything like that, it tends to be like kind of homophobic, like a lot. So, for me to do that was kind of like a big deal with my mom and dad. My dad like hated it. My dad also was just like, you know, that's just the way he is. And he just accepted me. My mom just always knew me as like a unique person. And they always involved me in sports. I love playing sports. I mean, organized sports is like one thing, but I've always liked going outside, like hanging out with friends, like, I've never been that kid who'd like had a lack of friends. I've always like found something to do and like kind of like accepted everyone. Like I didn't want to hang out with like kids who cared about like Jordans and stuff like that, or like who wanted to fight all the time. But like, I definitely liked like playing basketball and like football and like just meeting new people. But most of the time I was just like skating and stuff with all my friends. We would hang out at this spot, like CVS, like in Allentown. And we would just skate nonstop, like every day, like crazy.
Sure, sure. And so, yeah, so it sounds like you, I mean, like most kids, you were kind of experimenting with a bunch of things and seeing what you were ultimately interested in. And like, did you, as you were going through school, did you care about school? Did you, I guess, apply yourself? Or was it one of those things that school was kind of a necessary evil you needed to go through?
I actually went to Catholic school for like a couple, from like fourth to like seventh grade. And like I said, I moved a lot. So I'll put this in perspective. I went to kindergarten in Globe Park School in Rhode Island, Woonsocket, Rhode Island. First grade, went there also. Second grade, I moved. Or no, maybe I went there as well. Anyway, I know for a fact, third grade, I went to Jefferson in Allentown, moved back to Allentown. Then fourth grade, I went to Sacred Heart, which is a private school. From fourth to seventh, there was a lot of stuff in my life going on, like my parents and everything. And I'm not going to blame it on them, but I was getting a lot of trouble there. I was like fighting and like doing all this crazy stuff. And like, I was also like, I think private school, like inherently for some reason, like every time I hang out with like a private school kid, they're always way more sketchy than like public school kids. I don't know why, but like that's just always been the case. Maybe it's because like a lot of their life had been reserved, so they like are trying to like get that like a little thing of like freedom or something, you know, and so they just go buck wild. But like, I don't know.
Sure.
That's the way I thought. And then I went to then I was supposed to fail seventh grade, but the public school system was like a D in private school, I would have failed. But in public school, I would have passed. So I switched to public school, and my dad was like, oh, you want to like do bad at school and you want to act up? Okay, well, go to public school, Allentown Public School. We're all like, he said exactly this. He was like, the wolves are out there, and they're gonna show you how to act up or something like that. He was just trying to scare me, and I was like, okay, like whatever. So I was like a big troublemaker in like seventh. I wasn't a huge troublemaker, but I was just like, kind of fucking around, just like doing whatever. Like I just didn't care, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So when I got to eighth grade, it was like actually like legit kind of scary for me, because I've never like been to like a public school in Allentown. It was like really nerve wracking, and my parents made it seem so bad. But like, I don't know. At that point, I mean, I still didn't care about school, but like I didn't do anything to get in trouble. So like in high school, I never got picked on or anything like that. I was actually heavily involved in like marching band in high school. And like theater academy, I like had a lot of friends in theater academy. I really liked, for some reason, like improv, and like I was in two musicals. One of them was A Chorus Line, and one was Joseph and the Technicolor Amazing Dreamcoat. And I had two, like a lead role in both of those. So that was like really different for me. I left my comfort zone a lot, like doing that. But it was like, I thought it was really good for me, you know.
Sure,
it's,
sure.
Like, nice to like just try things out. And I really like being in chorus. I mean, I like just like extracurriculars, like just like hanging out, and that's how I made friends. And I don't know, but like the high school I went to, you can look it up. Like it's like really sketchy. It's called William Allen High. It's known to be like the most like overpopulated and like crime-ridden school in Allentown. And I actually, in Pennsylvania, I think it's like one of the worst of it. But like, I don't know. I didn't see it as that way. I just didn't really get involved. A lot of crazy shit was like happening in my school, but for some reason, it always like went around me. I got bullied like one time because I was selling candy bars for my on marching band. Some kid comes up to me and he's like, yo, let me get one. I'm like, nah. And he just took it. He was like, what are you gonna do now? And I was like, nothing. I'm not gonna do anything. And I just like walked away. He was like, young boy. He just like, just like, he was like a football player, and he just like sounded to me. So I was like, it's fine.
Sure.
Just a candy bar.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, so, yeah, it's, I mean, it sounds like a lot of your experiences were definitely from the fact that, you know, you liked to inject yourself into different scenarios that had a community, you know? So it's like, yeah, when you were in a play,
Yeah. Obviously
there's a community there. Like it wasn't the community,
right,
you know, at large where people are sort of typically drawn to, like the football team or whatever. So you were always looking, right, for those people to join where you're like, oh yeah, I can get with this.
Yeah, like, it was, like, cool. Like, I couldn't, you know, I'm not physically fit to be a football player. I would have gotten trash. And I remember actually for 2 weeks I tried playing lacrosse, but I just, like, couldn't get behind it. It was just too, and I hate this word. I hate when people use the word, like, oh, it's too macho. Like, but I literally wasn't macho enough to play. Like, I tried to be like, yo, let's go. Like, but I just straight up, like, just couldn't get into it. I liked the idea of playing sports, but, like, when it came to, like, high school organized sports, everyone was like, yeah, like, I'm going to be, like, a lacrosse player, like, you know, these sports, like, fucking matter so much. It's like, it really doesn't matter to me. I just literally just want to have fun and, like, play. So that's how it was. I should have done track because that seems, like, really sick, and I like running sometimes. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I should have done something like that for sports. But I don't know. I really liked theater. It was really cool, and I had a lot of friends there. It wasn't like I was like, oh, I definitely want to be, like, an actor, but it was just something like, this is going to make school easier, and I'm having kind of fun doing it, you know? And marching band was, like, that was the shit. Like, I loved, like, playing in marching band. I was in drumline. I was, like, the snare drum.
Sure.
And it was so sick. I loved it.
Was that your first kind of introduction to drums, or how do you play drums prior to that?
Well, I played drums prior to that. Like, my parents saw me, like, I used to play, I used to listen to System of a Down. That's what really, really got me to, like, want to play an instrument. But I used to listen to System of a Down all the time. And I, like, memorized their drums, like, the way it would be played on air drums. Like, I would just, like, pretending I was playing. My mom was like, okay, I'll get you sticks. You can hit boxes. She used to let me hit cardboard boxes. And so, like, she was like, wow, you actually, like, sound like you kind of know what you're doing. So, like, one year, like, she randomly got me, like, a $200, like, straight up pawn shop drum kit, and, like, I straight up couldn't believe it. I was, like, so pumped. And the first song I ever learned was, like, Chop Suey, you know what I mean, by System of a Down. I was
sure.
So pumped. They sold my drum kit or something like that because I couldn't, like, we were moving a lot, blah, blah, blah. And then years later, like, 11th grade or something, like, they got me another one, and that's when I started my first band. It was called Slum. And
got it.
It was me and my friend Zach, and then we got, like, our friend Eric in, and then our friend Big, our friend Zach Klingelman, and it ended and a whole bunch of stuff. But yeah, that was my first introduction to drums, was like a little drum kit.
Got it. did you ever have a notion of trying other instruments where you're like, oh, let's mess with guitar a little bit, or was it always like, no, drums?
Yeah.
Okay.
I tried guitar, and I remember, like, my mom got me a first act, and I was, like, trying to strum with, like, a penny because I didn't have any picks. I had no idea what I was doing. Like, it was just, like, it just seemed, like, dumb to me. I was just, like, I hate that I have to, like, learn chords. It was, like, it takes this much work, and, like, I don't know. Like, I just, like, it wasn't the fact that, like, I don't think, I just wanted something, like, immediate sense gratification, so I immediately wanted to be good at guitar, and, like, that was too much for me. And as soon as I picked up drums, I immediately was like, wow, I can actually, like, play a beat. Like, this is awesome. So, like, naturally, like, that's what I went towards, you know?
Got it. Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
I was, like, a young kid.
Sure. Well, yeah, most people, I think, when they pick something up, they want to be slightly proficient at it. They're not like, oh, yeah,
right,
I can't wait to put in, you know, hours and years of work to get...
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like, maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken, and I wish that I would be able to, like, get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire, and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Get okay at something, you know?
Right. And you know, and now looking back at it, I'm like, damn. Well, now I'm looking back and I'm teaching myself guitar and I understand how things work. But like then, like my parents didn't care enough to tell me like, hey, you're going to need to work real hard on this to get good. Like they were just like, here's this guitar. And you know, because they didn't know.
Yeah.
It was like, whatever. Like, you know, just play. I don't think they knew. They thought I was going to stick to anything. Just like the drums. And then I actually like really stuck to the drums and they were like, oh, damn. But the thing was, I lived in the city, and I didn't have like a garage or anything to practice in. So I could only practice like once in a while. And like, I think they just had enough. And like, that was really it.
Listen, you've probably always wanted to learn how to play an instrument. Like I've played in bands for years, but you know, I only knew guitar a little bit, drum a little bit. Musician is the place to go when you are at that juncture in your life where you're like, I want to dive in, but I don't know where to begin. So Musician is your personal music tutor for this digital age. It's the best way to learn, practice, and master a musical instrument because it listens to you play and gives you instant feedback on your accuracy and timing. Plus, it's free to download from your app store. When you use your real instrument, this app includes lessons for guitar, piano, bass, ukulele, and vocals. So whether you're a complete beginner or an experienced player, you can follow expert design courses that guide you with exercises and feature popular hit songs. So you can be like, hey, I know how to play that now. This app takes you through step-by-step tutorials that suit your playing level. It is fun and addictive. It's kind of like playing a game, and it tracks your progress and keeps you motivated so you actually learn. Musician has over 10 million users, and they believe that everybody can and should have the experience of learning a musical instrument. Like I said, I've always dabbled with musical instruments, but I've never committed to it. Musician has pushed me over the edge. Me and my son hanging out, playing guitar. I'm learning chords, learning notes, learning how to do the damn thing. And it is so much fun. So become the musician you always wanted to be. Download Musician for free in your app store today. Okay? Do that right now. Download it. Put it on your phone. Start playing around with it. It's incredible. Okay? Musician, thank you very much. Now, on with the show.
You kind of mentioned this earlier on, and I know from just kind of other pieces of you know, interviews that you've done in the past, where you know, religion and Catholicism was like a, you know, a huge part. And like you mentioned, you went to a private high or a private elementary school that was centered around that. And you know, I presume your relationship with Catholicism was one of those things where it's like, oh yes, I'll go to church, and my parents are doing it, so I'll do this. And when did you when did you feel like you I basically started to explore other options where you're like, oh yeah, Catholicism, maybe this isn't for me. I need to see what else is out there.
Well, actually, like I went to a private school, middle school from fourth to seventh, same difference. But my parents, like they got me, like they wanted me to be an altar boy, get my sacraments done. Like I was like baptized, first communion, that whole shebang. And like I literally did not care. Like I don't think I ever really thought like Jesus or anything like was important to me. It was more fear based, where I was like, oh, like if I curse, like, Jesus, like, I'm literally going to get hit by a car or something tomorrow. Like, it's going to be crazy. I'm going to get smited. And, like, you know, I was an altar server, and, like, it was just, I was just kind of like going through the motions. But I think that's how it is in anything you force your kids to do. I think that's just the way it is. Unless, like, they go out of their way to, like, do it themselves, and you can see, like, a general interest. Like, I was just forced. If I didn't go to church, I would get grounded. And, like, but it's funny because, like, my parents, they hardly even went to church. So we went to church like once in a while. Like, they would go like every once in a while, but like most Sundays they would just send us, and we would just have to go. Which, looking back on it, that's like kind of messed up. But like, that's just the way it was. And they, I don't know. I think they wanted to, like, I think they had good intentions. They wanted us to have like a good foundation and like be good people. But like, I just don't think that like it went the right way. And Catholicism to me doesn't really stand out. You know, I don't want to talk bad about anything, but like, it's just not, you know,
was it for
I
you?
Think a lot of people just don't really vibe with it. You know, it just isn't for me. And I think the whole basis around the fear and all that stuff and the imagery is just, you know, it just doesn't appeal to me. You know, it may be for someone, but it's not for me, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, like you said, you started, you know, playing in bands when you were, you know, middle school, heavily influenced by, like you said, you know, System of a Down and bands like that.
Right.
You know, as you first started to kind of like play shows and start to experience more of a, you know, local scene and all that sort of stuff, were you immediately drawn into it, or was it one of those things you kind of had to, you know, learn how to be, you know, a kid at shows and stuff like that?
I think I was like pretty much immediately drawn to it. Like, as soon as I went to my first show, because this person named Ray Gers, he runs this company called Rossel, and he was in this band called Bad American. I used to see him at this place called Penscape, like, a bunch. And he knew, like, my dad. Like, well, he didn't really know my dad. My dad was, like, an old school skater, and, like, people knew him. So, like, he would see me around, like, skate events, stuff like that. He knew I was, like, into punk, and he was like, okay, I'm going to show you this place. We're playing here on whatever day they played. And he was like, you know, just come out and just tell me what you think. And I remember going, and I was just like, oh my God, like, this is the coolest thing I've ever done. And then as soon as I went, I just like never stopped going. I was just going to basement shows like nonstop. And I would be like, and eventually I got comfortable enough with like just hitting really hard. And I wasn't always known as the kid who like did that. But like, I think that like people thought I was annoying, but then again, I always like to be involved with like helping with the door, helping set up, things like that. Like, those were always things that were a really big interest of me. Cause like, I don't know. I've always just like you said earlier, which is a funny day, like, it's a crazy realization, but like, I've always like being involved in the communities, you know? And so like, I always wanted to be heavily involved with like helping. I didn't want to come off. Like, my dad taught me, if he taught me one thing, he was like, don't be a mooch. So like, don't go to people's like events and like, don't offer to help or like anything. Don't, you know what I mean? So like, I always wanted to like, just kind of like give help where I could, you know?
You wanted to contribute.
Right, exactly. And you know, I think that's like important.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the whole reason that I think people like you and I are drawn to, you know, like playing in bands and being active and doing all that stuff. Like, not only is it fun, but it's the notion that whatever you're contributing and doing is hopefully going to, you know, influence people who are, you know, even just a couple of years younger, and who, you know, cause like, if you're nice to a kid at a show that they're 14 years old, all of a sudden they're like, oh man, like, this place is cool and it's fun. I'm going to go to shows more often.
Yeah.
Like, you never know how that stuff's going to impact people.
Right. And you know, and I wasn't always like a perfect person. Like, I've definitely like fall out of show before and stuff like that, but you know, I feel like that's normal. But I always like low key knew that I was like, if I don't help in any way, you know, then this will probably end. And like that was pretty scary for me, especially because I didn't have a band yet. And like, I was like, damn, like, I gotta be able to play these shows. And then when I started like playing them, I was like, damn, like, I want to keep these shows going. Like, this is sick. Like, I don't know. I wanted to just keep like punk and hardcore, like, to keep going so much. Like, but like, then again, there was nothing I could really do. Like, I was so like, I was like 16 and like, I don't know. It's kind of like excuses, but like, you know, I wish I had the push or the drive to want to like book stuff. I just didn't know anyone. I don't know. I came from like out of nowhere, and then I just started like a band and hung out. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand. Well, yeah, you can always look at like what you quote unquote didn't do, but, you know, that's in the past, and that's nothing you can change. And,
right. There's nothing, you know.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. And so, you know, as you, like you said, as, you know, this Jesus Peace LP being like your first record and stuff like that, and like, as, you know, Jesus Peace like started, were you, you know, like, how do you toured up into that point? And what was your relationship with like tour and traveling and stuff like that?
I didn't hit, like, I didn't travel out of like Pennsylvania until like I was like 17 or something like that. I mean, I lived in Rhode Island, and every so often I used to go with my my friend from high school. We used to go to Massachusetts and visit her mom. But otherwise, like I was in this band. Like, it was like this, like, we wanted to be so many different things. I wanted to be like DSBM. They wanted to be like Lightbearer. This other person wanted to be like Immortal. Like, we were just like all over the place. The other person wanted to be like Tragedy. And it was called Kata Hajime, which I don't recommend. I mean, if you want to listen to it, you can. You'll hear like how crazy, like terrible I was at drums and everything, which is, it's funny to look back on. But we did like a 3-day tour or 4-day tour or something like that. And it was like, we went to like West Virginia, Pittsburgh, and like somewhere random. But I haven't like done any extensive tours like beside that. That was like really it. And I toured in like this like truck, and it was just like, it was fun. I you know, I'm not gonna be like, oh, it wasn't fun, but it was I had a lot of fun. It was like my first tour experience, and I was happy to just be out there playing for other people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so then as you started to, you know, get out there with Jesus Piece and start to, you know, play more shows and start to notice that people were caring and stuff like that, you know, how did that personally kind of like feel for you as you started to notice that people were paying attention to what you were doing?
Well, I mean, as soon as you dropped the EP, like, it was crazy. Like, I've never witnessed, I didn't have Twitter until like Jesus Piece really started. And so we dropped the EP, and I think we had like 3,000 retweets or something, like the first day of putting it out or something crazy like that. I just was like, what the fuck? I was like, what is going on? I was with Dave, he was guitar, at his mom's house in New Hope, PA. We dropped it, and everyone was just going crazy. Like, I was like, what? Like, I just couldn't believe it. So then we were like, all right, like, fuck it, we'll just like make shirts. And so we made shirts the weekend of This Is Hardcore, like, and they sold, we made like 50 shirts, and they sold out in like 10 minutes. I just couldn't believe it. And after that, we just always had this rep of like, oh my God, grab their stuff, it's going to sell out. Or like, oh, they're like a hype band and all this crazy stuff. But like, you know, the fact that anyone even listened, were like so into it. And like our first shows were like all amazing. Like, I was like, damn, like this is like so sick. But all that comes from is a sense of commodity. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's not, you'll see like a lot of bands, a lot of people will be like, oh my God, they're such a good band. But most of the time it's because their friends are going crazy for them. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, like, absolutely.
And that's really where it comes from. Cause like people in hardcore, they're not really looking, no one cared how good we sounded. Like, no one cares how good Dave is at guitar. No one cares about how good I am at drums. People acknowledge that and like it. But most people who come to hardcore are looking for the energy or like the whole, like the environment. So like we gave our friends, really put forth that effort to give everyone that like experience where it was like an insane environment. And we got known as that. And it just went viral, I guess. And it was like really cool. And I think that our music was like subpar. It was like good, but like whatever. Like, but it was more of like, you know, it was more of just like our friends putting on really hard for us and us just like really believing in ourselves and just playing hard as hell every time. So,
sure.
I don't know. It just worked out that way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really cool. I mean, I do like how you mentioned that fact of, you know, having your friends support you. And, cause yeah, it's like most, when you go into a show and you see like a, you know, local band, and then you start to see, you know, whatever, 20 or 30 kids care about them, you're like, not only is it cool because they're local, but then you start to see where it's like, oh yeah, other people are into this. Like, I think I want to join in. And you know, you just,
exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I totally get that. I mean, it happens for so many bands like that.
Right. Like if you watch Vane's or even ours, for instance, is hardcore, like, and I love Vane. Like, they're like some of our good friends. You'll notice that, like, if you know them, you'll know that everyone in the pit is their homie. And they're just going so hard. And that's what made that look just so cool, because it was like, everyone's just going so crazy. And no one even knows that it's like all their homies like going crazy. And I just think that it's sick that even like you could even get your homies in the first place to just go that hard the whole set. I thought that was just like so impressive. And like, you know, hardcore, like, I think modern day hardcore is like, it's not even about necessarily the music anymore. I mean, it definitely is. It 120% is. But what I mean by that is, like, you got to bring something else to the table. You got to have that energy. You got to have that message. You got to have something, because, like, you know, otherwise we're just recycling a lot of people's stuff. You know what I mean? Hardcore's been done. I mean, there's a lot of new and innovative things that are coming out. Like, I personally don't think, you know, like, everyone is, like, super, like, you know, copying everything. But, you know, a lot of it is, you know, a lot of it is just recycled stuff, but, like, done in a different way, or perceived in a different way.
Shut up. Yeah.
And,
no, it's okay.
And, so that's what makes it different and more exciting, is that, like, you know, this person's doing, or, like, this is the reaction they get, or this is the way they're presenting their record, or, like, I don't know, like, or they're mixing it with this genre. It's just cool. You know what I mean? It's cool. And I definitely love, I like all the recycled, like 80s hardcore, like everyone that sounds like, I don't know, Floor Punch, or, like, Use It Today to Me, or, like, SSD, like, all that stuff is cool to me. I don't get bored of it, personally. I know some people are like, this is the same shit as, like, Negative Approach. I'm like, yeah, but I like Negative Approach, and it's cool that a band nowadays is still doing it, and, like, you know, it's nothing innovative. And I think as long as you can, like, realize and represent and kind of acknowledge, like, where your pioneers and, like, all your influences coming from, and I think that's cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, because, too, it's like you have to look at it from a cyclical perspective, where it's like, you know, hardcore morphs and changes every, you know, 4 to 5 years. So it's like, yeah, it's kind of like high school, where it's like, if you're a freshman, the seniors are the cool kids. And so, you know, what, you know, whatever, I'm 37 years old. And it's like, when I started to go to shows, like, I couldn't see Gorilla Biscuits or Chain of Strength or any of those bands, but the bands that sounded like them, that, you know, like you said, mentioned the fact that they are influenced and are, you know, paying homage to those bands, I could see them at shows, and I could get stoked on that. And that's the only way that you can kind of, you know, push things forward, rather than just, like, be stuck in a certain era and that's it.
Right. Like, you can't, like, make an album that sounds just like SSD and be like, we are innovative. Cause no, you're not. But, like, it's still cool that you're doing it and you're recognizing, and you're just, it's cool that people are making bands for the scene. And I don't know. I just really respect anyone who's trying to make music at all, because, like, a lot of people who are critiquing other bands have never actually been or in a band or made music or booked a show or done anything for the scene. So it's like, of course you have shit to say, because you have never experienced it. You don't know, realize how hard it is to actually go out there and tour, to actually lose money on a show, to actually book a show in general, and, like, or do anything, make a zine. So I don't know, even if it's not innovative, I think I respect it. It's cool. And
yeah,
you know, I have my taste, obviously, but, like, you know, I give kudos to anybody, you know, working hard, trying to do what they got to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that kind of segues into, you know, a question I was going to have in regards to that sort of idea, where it's like, you know, you have bands like, you know, Code Orange and Turnstile, and, you know, you guys definitely fall within that, where it's like, you know, younger, you know, more modern bands that are starting to have an impact beyond just, you know, our hardcore scene, or even in the broader sense of the term, like the metal scene.
It
strikes me as these bands are always, you know, no shots at them, but, like, it's always that delicate balance of trying to maintain the people who, you know, had been introduced to these bands when they first started, but then also expanding and making sure that, you know, newer people are coming to the show who might not be into the punk and hardcore scene and stuff like that. And I'm sure that you guys kind of go into that same notion, where it's like, okay, well, you know, we are a punk and hardcore band, but, you know, we want to play in front of, you know, different audiences and stuff like that. Are these conversations that you guys are having kind of internally in regards to, you know, whatever opportunities for tours and, you know, stuff that, like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do this tour because it's, you know, too weird for us to do or whatever. How does that kind of impact you?
Well, first of all, let me clear this up. A lot of shit. We got a lot of shit. When we first dropped our EP, like, so many people talk shit. And, you know, it was hard for us to kind of you know, swallow. It was just like, damn, like, no one in the scene is you know, a lot of people were backing it, obviously. But then again, it was like, a lot of people were like, oh, blah, blah, blah. They're calling us, like, deathcore kids, whatever the hell that means. And, you know, I've never listened to deathcore personally, but, like, you know, who gives a damn? So at first we were, like, really weird about, like, the whole, you know, should we expand, blah, blah, blah. But, like, and I think it hasn't been until recently that, like, we've really just, like, I, like, openly said, like, nothing matters. Like, because to me, like, hardcore is not really about like how you sound. I mean, it is in the sense, but like, you know, bands like Code Orange, like, I just saw.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
All them at this fest called Made in America, which is like a, like, it's ran by Jay-Z and Beyonce. And like, I think that's sick. And like, the fact is that if you look at all their tours, they're still taking hardcore bands out. You know what I mean? They're still putting new bands out there. And it's cool that they're expanding and like going and like playing all this different stuff. Like, they're touring with like Meshuggah and all these like crazy bands. But like, you know, and then all the fans are gathering from there. Some of those people are going to listen to Code Orange and like check out other hardcore bands, and then like that, you know, that's what makes the scene grow. Because if you're playing to the same 50 people in your town, then where's the growth at all? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like pretty obvious.
In a world where everyone is confined to their homes, society begins its largest binge watch to date. In the hallowed library of Hulu, or perhaps on a shelf of DVDs you haven't looked at in a decade, is a show that perfectly encapsulates life in the early aughts and launched a friendship that would inspire millions. Hi, I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
In 2001, we starred in Scrubs, a sitcom that revealed a glimpse of what it was like to survive a medical internship. As Turk and JD, we explored guy love.
Nearly 20 years later, a lot has changed. We're not supermen, but we're still best friends.
Eh.
Given the mandatory lockdown, there's no better time to relive the series that brought us together in the first place. And we're doing it with a podcast.
That's right, people. We're going to bring friends and crew members and fellow cast members and writers. And guess what? We're going to even invite some of you to call into the podcast and ask all the questions you want of the entire Sacred Heart staff.
Join us for Fake Doctors, Real Friends on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, for sure. You're preaching to the choir. And I think, I guess the itch that I wanted to scratch of that question is the fact that a lot of the decisions that are, you know, made from bands, like, there's always this notion of kind of the punk rock guilt of like, okay, well, you know, yes, we want to, you know, be able to like make a living for ourselves, you know, being a hardcore band and touring and all that sort of stuff. But like the notion that like, okay, we can't get too big too quickly because of, you know, whatever, we'll get burnt out or whatever. There's a million different things.
Right.
But yeah, but there definitely, like you said, there is that, you know, the loud hardcore purist on the internet that's going to look at, you know, bands like you guys and just be like, oh, whatever, like, these dudes, you know, they weren't born into a Minor Threat show, so of course, like, they're posers or whatever, you know.
Well, a lot of times, I've been going to shows almost 10 years. Everyone in Jesus Piece has been going to hardcore shows almost 10 years now. So like any internet person who wants to talk like shit on us can suck my ass. In my opinion, that's just how I feel. But at this point in my life, but I think that, you know, and what you're saying is like, you know, like, oh, should we do this tour? Like, blah, blah, blah. And like now in this current time, no, I don't think we feel that way. I think that we would be willing to do like a lot of things because I think we really have just, like we really outdid ourselves in hardcore, and we will never stop playing hardcore shows, but we are all as people are very diverse. Like we all like a lot of different music. So that's just the way we are. And that's the way we feel. So like if people want to judge us because we want to tour with like a rock band or we want to tour with like a metal band, that's just their problem. That's their own like personal issue with us that has nothing to do with us. And right. I don't think that any of us are per se trying to make like a living off Jesus Piece, because I just don't think that our music is the one where you can do that, in my opinion. Like I don't think that Jesus Piece will ever be played outside of like Sirius XM Extreme Radio or like
yeah, you're not gonna be the next Metallica. Right
Exactly. We all know that. So like why would we sit here and like try to lie ourselves and be like, we can get big off this? That's just not how we felt. That's never how we felt. It was nice being able to just tour nonstop and like people care, but like, you know, and I don't think we're going to be the next big metal band either. I think that we're always just going to make music the way we like it. At first, I definitely admit that at first we were like self-conscious, like, damn, like people aren't feeling us. Like, you know, what do we do? Like blah, blah, blah. And it just really comes down to the fact that like, it's your life. It's your music. Who gives a shit? You know who you are. You don't have to prove it to anyone else. You know what I'm saying? So like, it was just like, we just said, fuck it. And just, or just doing whatever. Like right. this album is important to me because it shows myself like what I'm capable of, but also like a good bridge into the diversity that we can bring.
Yeah.
Cause I don't think that every song on the album is like a beat down. Like, I just think that we're way more than that, in my opinion. I just think that we have way more to offer, and you know, and if people recognize it and want to take us out, then we'll go. But you know,
sure.
We're just not gonna keep doing like the same hardcore thing over and over again. But then again, we're not in this to make like $1 million. That's just not the way it is.
Yeah, no, I totally see where you're coming from.
Right.
Last two things I want to hit on before I let you go was the, you know, you are, like you mentioned before we started recording, you know, you're in upstate New York with, you know, you're working with your guru and everything like that. So are you practicing Buddhist, or what sort of, I guess, strain of that are we looking at?
I'm a devotee, and I'm trying to be a devotee, excuse me. And
got it.
The International Society of Krishna Consciousness.
Got
so
it.
It's like all the Krishna core, you know, Krishna core.
Absolutely. Of course. Yeah. I just want to make sure we're talking to the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm here with my Shiksha guru. His name is Hariyasa Das. He runs the Govindas in Philadelphia.
Oh yeah.
Every Krishna core kid knows what that is.
Classic. Yeah.
So, and any like hardcore person who comes to this is hardcore or Philly hardcore at all, they know what Govindas is. So they, you know, represent Philly. But, yeah, he needed some help. It was this thing called Janmashtami. So it's, at the appearance day of Lord Krishna. He's the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. And then today was our Jagat Guru. He's the person who started the movement here in the West, because it's an Eastern philosophy, obviously. So, and he died in 1975 or 6 or 77, I forget, one of those years. And today was his birthday. So, you know, we were just celebrating, and, you know, he's an older man, so I help him out a lot. And, yeah, it's just really nice to be here.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so how, I guess, you know, I presume within the hardcore scene is kind of where you got exposed to the Krishna consciousness. And I'm going to presume bands like, you know, Shelter played a pivotal role in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually really, black metal is actually the first thing that got me into like more just like, you know, what's, because let me go back to like the whole Catholicism thing.
Sure.
Catholicism was not for me. I didn't enjoy that. I didn't enjoy the pressure. I didn't enjoy the philosophy. None of it made sense to me. A lot of it was fear based. A lot of people weren't. I think like in the Satanic Bible, it's like Anton LaVey, which is like kind of funny, but he's like, people go to church on Saturday and then are going back to like lusting after girls on Sunday and like drinking and eating meat and things like that. And that always struck a chord with me when I read that quote, because I was like, that's very true. Like a lot of people aren't, you know, very true, and they're over here preaching, and like, you know, it was very like money based, and it was just very, very just strange to me personally. This is my experience. So, you know, I never once was like, God doesn't exist. God is fake. And like, it's okay if you do feel like that, but I always felt that it was ridiculous to say like, this earth came from nothing and, you know, we're just all here. You know, this is just the way it is. And I always felt, and to some degree, like, even when I was like 15, I would be like, yeah, I'm agnostic. Like, I don't know what I believe in, but like, you know, there's something out there. You know what I mean? I always felt that way. And so, when I was really into black metal at a current period of my life, I mean, at a certain period of my life, excuse me. And, I got so into like, like nature and trees. And I was like, wow. Like it was like that feeling of being in a really nice place. And I was like, this is what like spiritual life is like. This is what it is. So I started reading about, there's this band called Barbalith from Baltimore. And my friend Billy, he played guitar in that band. He was like, oh, I'm a yoga teacher. I teach Ashtanga yoga. So I was like, oh, okay. Ashtanga means eight limbs. It's the eightfold yoga path. It's something that people practice. I really don't know too much about it, but he was like, oh, you should read this book. It's called The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. So I was reading that and I was like, oh my God, it was very scientific. And it was really like, it wasn't like dogma to me. You know what I'm saying? Like where it was just like, you have to believe this or this. It was just very like, it broke everything down. Every question I've ever had, I was like, not ever had, but like, you know, I was like, wow, like, this is really nice. But it wasn't enough for me because it taught impersonalism. It taught voidism. Personalism essentially is like, I am my own God. I worship myself, which is like, I think that's also foolish because you can't be your own God because we can't even control our own senses. In a sense, we're like, every morning you have to get up to pee. You can't control that. If you're God, you're omnipotent. You should be able to control that. You know what I'm saying? So I seek way further and I started reading books by Prabhupada, the Bhagavad Gita, Science of Self-Realization. And I got so into that and I still am. And you know, and it really changed my life. And like, it made me more like, I don't know. Overall, I would say I'm working to be a better person. A lot of people, when they see a spiritual person, they're like, and they see him do something like funky, they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Aren't you supposed to be like a spiritual guy? It's like, no, I'm attempting to be a spiritual guy, but you're over here just like chastising me when like, I'm just trying to be better for myself. But obviously we're all human. You know what I'm saying?
So yeah. We're all flawed.
I learned about myself. Yeah, that we're 100% all flawed. I mean, if you're born in the material world, you are immediately imperfect. All your senses are imperfect. So it's hard for anyone to say some crazy thing, you know?
Yeah.
But this is like something that means a lot to me. I lived in temples. I've been to India. I've been to Vrindavan. My girlfriend's very supportive of it. And she reads and chants with me. My family's very supportive. I've been vegetarian for a long time. I eat vegan now, but I was vegetarian for a lot longer. And
nice,
you know, I could talk your ear off all day about it, but you know,
no,
anyone listening to this, I recommend reading any of Srila Prabhupada's books if you're interested. I think everyone is naturally like sort of interested in like questions like, who am I, what is my purpose, things like that. So, you know, I always tell people just, you know, don't be so close-minded. In hardcore, it's easy for people to be like, religion doesn't belong, but I actually don't think Krishna consciousness is a religion. That's a whole other argument. But,
yeah, no, I understand. I understand what you're saying. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, I think, especially within the context of punk and hardcore, I think most people that turn a skeptical eye towards religion or organized faith in any capacity comes from the standpoint of like, you should be, or you should be rebelling against authority. You should be rebelling against these things, these structures.
The thing that's funny about that is that's exactly what devotee life is like. It's exactly rebelling against, rebelling against everything that you ever knew, about what you do, your culture, the way you eat, the way you get up in the morning. That Krishna consciousness is rebelling against all of that. And that's what punk is. Punk is literally like, I don't want to deal with this shit anymore. I'm so sick of America, blah, blah, blah. That's what Krishna consciousness is. If you're sick of it, then look at Krishna consciousness, because it's like, everything you knew about anything just changes. Like, you just start acknowledging for things, you become more grateful. And I don't think that you also are totally against the grain of society, like 120%. Like, so I don't know. It's just funny how they punk and hardcore, they actually go hand in hand. I would say that devotees are more, are more intense about like their devotional life than straight-edge people are. You know, straight-edge people always like are like, oh, blah, you know, this and that. But devotees are also straight-edge. But I think devotee life is the real straight-edge. You know what I mean? Like a lot of, most of them are all celibate and they practice very stringently. A lot of people here are very stringent and, you know, they work very, very hard on their sadhana and, you know, they're fixed and
yeah.
I don't know. They're some of the most intense, like amazing people I've ever met. And it's really great.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. It's good. It's good to have discipline in your life. Cause like, it's like driving a car without any regulation at all. And then you're just going to start crashing and stuff. And people wonder why their karma is so bad or like, why do things happen to me? And blah, blah, blah. And they always want to blame everything else. But you know, it all comes from yourself. You have the free will to do what you please. And every action has a reaction.
Absolutely.
Ultimately. No,
it's just, yeah, it's cool that you were able to find that, you know, important aspect of your life. It's really cool.
Right, exactly. And this is my own personal thing. So, you know, I definitely never push it on anyone or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. That's why I asked, because it's interesting. And I think it's always been an element of the punk and hardcore scene. And I'm glad that it's always there, because I think people need to find something to anchor themselves rather than just, you know, being like, oh yeah, it's like, fuck God, I'm an atheist. And it's just like, okay.
or just, you know, fuck everything. Another way people think is just fuck everything. And I don't care about anything. And
yeah.
Who cares about the world? It doesn't benefit me. And you know, things like, it doesn't help me. This doesn't help me. Why should I care about that? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
we just need a good grounding. Hello?
Yeah, no, we just need a good grounding.
Yeah. And I just think that, like, you know, if we want to change anything in the world, we have to ultimately change ourselves. So we can't make any change if we're not changed, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The last thing I would hit on was I wouldn't call it a working theory per se, but something that I find, you know, incredibly interesting. I'm speaking as a person who, you know, still cares about, you know, punk and hardcore when I'm almost 40 years old. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so incredibly engaging, where it's just like, you know, cause how old are you in your early 20s? I'm guessing.
I'm 24.
Okay. Yeah. So,
the
access point for people such as yourselves, cause like, you know, whatever, just hopping into your Instagram feed, you know, clearly have a lot of interests, like, you know, skateboarding, obviously Christian consciousness. But then, you know, you're also into fashion and you have, you know, the ability to put yourself out there in ways that, you know, other, punk and hardcore kids, you know, whatever, 15 years ago would be like, what the hell is this? Like, I don't know if this belongs.
And so,
I personally think that because there's so much, you know, visual candy and stimulation for, you know, people like the world that we live in now, that you can kind of combine all of these different things to where, you know, whatever, 10 years ago, people would be into, but they don't have the ability to kind of share that on a wide spectrum and influence people.
Right.
It's like, oh, you can't, like, yes, of course, fashion and hardcore, like that's always existed, you know, the notion of kind of being able to put all this together in a weird stew, can kind of, you know, push it forward in ways. Like, I don't know if any of what I'm saying has any, you know, resonance to you.
No, I understand.
But yeah,
well, like, I'm not sure like how you, what you want me to say though.
No. So the, like I said, the working theory is the fact that, you know, you yourself can be into all of these different things where, you know, they're essentially two separate worlds. You know, fashion is one world, hardcore is another world.
Right.
But because you exist in both, you can kind of put them together in ways that other people necessarily can't. So, I presume that's all enjoyable for you to kind of like, you know, be experiment in all these different platforms and mediums.
Right. Well, I think that like the reason I even came to like a lot of things is like, for instance, I got more into fashion because of Marissa. She went to school for marketing with a focus in fashion, and she really inspired me. I've always liked dressing in a certain way, and I never really cared too much about like, you know, expensive clothes or anything like that. But I really enjoyed like the work that goes into photos and things like that. And to touch on what you were saying, like I think it's important for people to realize that like, you don't only have to like hardcore. Like, it's cool to like do other things. Like, I think that's like so inspiring to like see, like, I don't know, like someone I look up to in hardcore doing like something cool. Like, I think someone in indecision or something like that is like a congressman in New York or something. Yep. I believe, like,
yeah.
I just think like stuff like that is like just so like important, like, because like hardcore is amazing, and it's nectar, and it, like, it, you know, it formed my life into what it is today. But I'm allowed to have other interests. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, I'm not trying to burn myself out, and, like, you know, this is all I like. This is it. I don't care about anything else. Like, no, like, everybody should have different interests. We should all be able to talk about it. We should all be able to feel how we want about anything and talk about whatever we want in a certain way. And I don't know. I just, like, I've always been like that, though. I've always had, like, a diverse, like, amount of interest my whole life. You know what I'm saying? Like, even, like, I went from, like, skating, going to punk shows to, like, going to theater academy, and, like, just, I've always just been really open-minded when it came to, like, things I want to put myself into. I don't often put myself, I'm really, like, how do I say, like, I don't like putting myself out there too much, but, like, once in a while I do, and then, you know, and I just, like, I go full head into things, when I'm really into something, you know what I'm saying? So, like, yeah, like I just announced yesterday that I'm walking for this vintage company called Shop the Break, and my friend Michael, he was like, hey, like, I saw that you really wanted to, like, try to start, like, you know, like, shooting for brands and stuff, and my friend runs this, and they're doing a New York fashion show, and they want you to walk in, and I was just like, yeah, like, that's cool, like, I've never done anything like this, you know, I've never worn an outfit like that, and I just thought that was, like, so cool and so interesting, so... And I always like to involve my friends. That's the thing. Like, I started a group chat. I was like, everybody has to go to this fashion show. It's just, like, cool. Like, just, like, getting everyone to, like, just try something new and, like, everyone get out there. Like, you're seeing, like, a whole bunch of hardcore kids, like, at a fashion show is just going to be so, like, sick. And, like, yeah. Even, like, some of the hardcore kids, like, that I'm friends with is just going to be, like, cool. Cause, like, even them, they're, like, into fashion, you know, not like that, but, like, it's just cool to, like, experience new things. I think that's the most important thing you could ever do in your life is just go experience stuff. Go travel. Go try things. Go see things. Go talk to new people. Don't sit in your town and make big insinuations or, like, big judgments on the world if you've never even experienced another person's life or culture. You know what I'm saying? People want to make huge accusations or, like, things about other people. They never even left their, like, their neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like, going to India was, like, one of the most important things that ever happened in my life because I would complain about the dumbest shit or, like, the way I lived and, like, blah, 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 and I don't have this. And, like, those people literally don't have anything in the village where I was. They were just taking care of, like, their kids, feeding, begging for money. But they were also fixed in their sadhana and their practice and like, they were so into taking care of their family and taking care of themselves. You know, they weren't complaining. They were happy just to be chanting, dancing, you know, and just, like, trying their best to, like, live. And, you know, obviously that's their karma and they're all there, but you know, I just, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just going off on a limb here. I'm just saying, like, I just think it's so important for everyone to just go, like, go crazy in life, just, like, experience everything, but of course, like, try and be, like, a positive impact. Like, don't self-destruct and don't kill yourself. And if you want to, like, and by kill yourself I mean, like, doing crazy drugs or anything like that. I just, you know, but I don't know.
Yeah. No,
I personally Sorry.
No, it's okay. To stop your train of thought. I understand where you're coming from because basically the notion of putting more influences in your head from, you know, different mediums and different worlds that may not make sense on the surface together will only add to the overall experience of not only you as a person in your life, but then you're able to take this stuff. And I mean, it's like, you know, because now punk and hardcore has existed since, you know, whatever, the early 80s, as far as, like, hardcore specifically is concerned. Now the fact that you're seeing all of these people that are in, you know, adults in, you know, high power positions that can all, like, have been profoundly influenced by punk and hardcore are now, you know, influencing fashion and influencing, you know, movies and all of these ways that, like, you know, whatever, 20 years ago you'd be like, oh, there's no way. But it's like, now it's like, oh dude, you're gonna pay $300 for a vintage Dark Throne t-shirt? It's like, oh my god. Like,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Where it's like, it's just crazy to watch that full circle stuff. But, like, yeah, to your point, limiting yourself and only kind of sticking to one lane is only going to give you one experience as opposed to, like, 15.
Right, exactly. And you know, and if you want to sit and, like, in your neighborhood and go just do whatever you were into, that's fine. You know, everyone's entitled to do what they please. I also want to say that I hate the fact that vintage shirts are that much. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to exploit hardcore in a sense where, like, I'm getting into all these things. I want everyone to get really into it because I still want the nectar of hardcore to be there. I don't want people paying all that money and all this crazy stuff. And I don't, it's cool if hardcore stays in the streets. That's cool with me. But personally, I'm into hardcore and also like things that are a little out there. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not necessarily hoping that, like, oh, I hope like hardcore hits the mainstream and like blah, blah, blah. Even though it is. You know what I mean? There's nothing we can really do, but
yeah, we don't control that. We're simply passengers. That's all we are.
Exactly. That's all we are in life. It's just simply passengers, and the world works around us.
Exactly. Well, Luis, thank you so much, dude. We've done it. I appreciate you. Taking the time with me and walking me through all this stuff. It was very enjoyable for me.
No problem. I always go off on tangents and just speak. But, I apologize for going off topic a bunch of times. But, I really appreciate you calling, and it was really fun.
Okay, dokay. That was great. Thank you very much, Luis, for coming on the show. And if you have not checked out the Jesus Peace record, you are doing yourself a disservice. You have to do that. It's a really, really good record. Quite possibly maybe making my top 10 list of the year, just tipping my hat a little bit. But and that episode is coming up. Oh man, I can't wait. We're actually going to be recording that in person. Holy moly, it's going to be so much fun. But anyways, the guest next week is another one of our sort of, I guess you'd call it buried treasures. It's with my good friend, Justin Moranga. He plays in a band called Ancestors, and he also runs a record label called Dune Altar Records. They put out the Entry 7-inch and a bunch of other cool stuff. But we talk about, records or bands or record labels that you wrote off at one point in your life, but you now embrace. Oh my gosh, it's a long episode, but it is worth it because there are all these records and bands that I kind of had my head cracked open and was like, oh wow, I haven't listened to that record. And then I did, and I really enjoyed it. So that's a super fun one that is happening next week. And until then, as usual, please be safe, everybody. Don't forget, big shout out to the musician, because you've probably always wanted to learn how to play a musical instrument, but you're like, where do I even begin? Let the Musician app be your personal music tutor. It's the best way to learn, practice, and master an instrument. It listens to you play and then gives you feedback real time on your accuracy. Become the musician you always wanted to be. Download Musician for free in your app store today. Okay? Now, for real. Be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com. Shh.
Hi, I'm Esther Dean. I've made my life by writing songs like Fireworks by Katy Perry, Super Bass by Nicki Minaj, What's My Name by Rihanna, just to name a few. And now I'm having an absolute blast sharing some of the knowledge that I've learned with upcoming songwriters on Songland on NBC. I'm excited to welcome you to a brand new season of Songland and Songland's podcast, giving you new insight into the magical art of songwriting, as told by some of the best in the business, and also the pioneers and the up-and-comers who will be shaping the hits you'll be listening to for years. We have an amazing roster of talent this season. I promise you, you don't want to miss one single episode. Don't miss Songland, Monday nights at 10, 9 Central, and join us here on Songland's podcast, available every week after the show on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.